The question demanding from provinces on the division of revenue, the process that has that some things occur, which will also be finalized next week when we are in the bottom. Before me, I've got the proposed agenda, the opening and welcome apologies, negotiating mandates, and any other business. Now, under item 4, I would want us to include, yesterday we circulated a draft report. Is that a draft? The reason why we circulated it now, whilst we are still busy with the process, is to make sure that, because next week we won't be here in Parliament, we'll be in Limpopo, is to make sure that we begin to make our input on the report, so that when we deal with the final product, after dealing with the final mandate from provinces, at least we are able to get it finalized in Limpopo and be submitted for plenary on the 25th. So that is basically the reason. It should not scare you to think that we have already in terms of preparing a report. It does a draft as it is, and then we'll, after dealing with the provincial mandate now, make some reflection on that particular report and finalize it next week in the book. And then thereafter, it will be closed. I don't think our meeting will go beyond 1 o'clock. So, Honourable Machine, you want to add?
No, Chair, just before you actually go a little bit further, I just wanted to check, because you are going to deal with the mandate, what is the position in relation to the provinces that are not present? Because up to now, one can count up to 6. And what are the things saying? And that's what I just wanted to check.
So far, Honourable Mashile, all provinces except Gauteng, I think Commerce Minister is here. Gauteng, I have sent somebody to the office, Constitution House, to follow up on the mandate. The rest of other provinces, all 8 of them, they have submitted their mandate. So in a situation where a province is not here, I think any member can read their mandate on behalf of that particular province.
Thank you, Chair. The Chairperson now has informed the beginning of that the Gauteng provincial legislation has actually submitted the money to finance. So I'm not quite sure. So I wanted to make a follow-up.
Okay, Honourable Moses. I had already sent Zolani to the liaison office of Gauteng because he's been phoning them, but they could not pick up the phone. They have to follow up on the mandate. But you are at liberty also to follow up if you would. Thanks. Now, Honourable members, in terms of apologies, I've got 3 apologies. That is an apology from Honourable Bloom, Honourable Gunda, and Honourable Zulu. Those are the 3 apologies that we have received. Honourable Gunda has attended the oversight visit for Select Committee on Security and Constitutional Development. That's why he could not be here. And Honourable Zulu is not able to attend the above meeting. He is in the province on parliamentary duties. And Honourable Bloom is also on an oversight visit with Corporate Governance Committee. You may reflect. Do you accept the apology? Accepted. Then negotiating mandates. I think my view is that will allow each and every province to take us through their mandate, and thereafter, in terms of those areas that are raised as provinces, by provinces as concerned for consideration, I will then allow Wendy from Treasury to reflect and immediately after that particular reflection from Treasury, then we can, as a committee, engage on those particular recommendations. Honorable Mashis.
Chair, another issue of procedure. This is for clarity. The mandate that we have received, are we supposed to receive the mandate from the committee in the legislature, or do we have to receive this mandate through the Speaker's office? Do we receive them directly from the committee to us, or does it have to go through the hand of the Speaker in the provincial legislature? What is supposed to be the correct thing? Because I've seen the two versions on the documents that are in front of me, but majority of them come directly from committee without the hand of the Speaker. I just want to know the correct thing here, Chair. Thanks.
In terms of the Mandating Procedures Act, if I remember well, there is a prescribed format that needs to be signed and submitted by the Speaker of the Provincial Legislature. But the practice of my observation in the previous processes like this one in different committees, provinces mostly, when they submit their negotiating mandates, they will do that via the committee. But when they submit their final mandates, they do that in the format as prescribed in the mandate procedure, because it cannot be accepted in the House if it does not come on that particular prescribed document signed by the Speaker. So next week, as we will be dealing with the final mandates, we'll be expecting them to come in that particular session. I will then start first by calling Mpumalanga to read the mandate.
Thanks, Chairperson. With respect to Mpumalanga, there is no report that has been attached to the the mandate, except that it is indicated that it will come with the final mandate. Then the mandate of Mpumalanga reads as follows, Chairperson.
Yes, in your case.
The Portfolio Committee on the Premier's Office, Finance, Community Safety, Security and Region has recommended that the permanent delegation to the NCOP should vote in favor of the bill, taking into consideration the input of the public and the Portfolio Committee respectively. Then the committee emphasized the following. There are three issues here. Sufficient time should be allowed to solicit views on Section 76 bills referred to legislatures, as some stakeholders were excluded to partake due to time constraints. In future, at least 3 weeks can ensure successful solicitation of views from stakeholders. This time frame is especially important in terms of the division of revenue gains. Then the second point, strict control measures should be implemented to assist the poor performing municipalities in year to ensure that procedures for the shifting of funds and rollovers from municipalities back to the national government should not disadvantage such municipalities, and priority should be given to supporting structures to assist these municipalities. Three, the criteria for the allocation of the amounts allocated to the provinces in terms of the Human Settlement Development Grant, the HIV and AIDS, the Life Skills Grant, and the Comprehensive HIV and AIDS Grant should be revisited so that Mpumalanga can get its fair share in this regard. Signed by the Chairperson, Honorable Viviv and Fuel. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Mashile. That was Mpumalanga supporting the bid with those particular concerns. I think we'll reflect on those concerns as I have indicated. May I now call upon Free State?
Thank you, sir. I support the negotiation mandate with regard to the GAD National 2010 Division of Revenue Fund. General Freeland. The National 2010 Division of Revenue Fund, before 2010, has been referred to the public account by the Finance Office of the Premier and Legislature Committee by the Speaker. On the 11th of March 2010, Mr. A. Mbune, Occupant Delegate of Fifth Age, briefed the committee on the content of the bill. The committee held public hearings on the 11th of March 2010 in Melbourne, Choice of Street, to solicit comments on the bill. The resolution. The committee resolved to ask one. But also to confess the Free State delegation to vote in favor of the bill without amendment.
Thank you, Honorable Nguni. That was Free State. I will now call upon Western Cape. Honorable Harry.
Thank you, Chair. The mandate, negotiating mandate from my provincial committee is that the legislature votes to support the bill with the following concern. Process of bringing the equitable allocation into line with in-migration into provinces should be expedited to enhance service delivery. Chair, if I have a question related to the mandate, should I ask it now or will I hold it for later?
That's all it for later. Oh, no. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Harris. That was Western Cape. I will now call upon, may I request Honorable Nguni to read for us the KZN mandate. Thank you, Honorable Nguni. That was KZN in support of the bill. May I now, if you may allow me to read Northwest. The mandate, negotiating mandate from Northwest with the scholars in terms of reference. The above mentioned bill was referred to the portfolio committee for consideration as a matter of priority. Briefing the portfolio committee on finance, economic development and tourism was briefed on the 9th March 2010 by Honorable T. Chani and officials from National Treasury are present, that is Lungile Mhlaba and Wendy Fanu. The committee called public hearings throughout the province on the 10 and 11 March 2010. The total number of people in attendance was 1,265. They come from miles of officials from the department, particular organization, and from respective wards in the province. Arising from the public hearings and the committee's deliberation on the Division of Revenue Bill B4-2010, the following points need to be taken into consideration by the NCOP in processing this piece of legislation. 1. Demarcation of Merafong and Kudumani municipalities have affected the budget of the province substantially. 2. The formula that the Financial Fiscal Commission uses to determine population and budget allocation of certain municipalities is a disadvantage to Northwest, as it is a vast and rural province. The population may be low demographically, yet there may be large areas to develop. 4. Resolution. Having made this observation, the committee mandates its permanent delegate in the National Council of Provinces to negotiate the consideration raised by the committee and the public for the following financial year, being 2011-12, signed by Honorable N. Maloy, the Speaker of the Provincial Legislature of Northwest. That is Northwest mandate in support of the bill with those two issues for consideration by this committee. I will now call upon Northern Cape.
Okay, thank you. This mandate I start to submit. Division of Revenue Bill 2010. The aim of the bill is to provide for the equitable division of revenue raised nationally among the national, provincial, and local spheres of government for the 2010-2011 financial year and the responsibilities of all three spheres pursuant to such division and to provide for matters connected herewith. On the 9th of March 2010, Honorable De Beer briefed the Committee on Finance on the said bill. On the 11th of March 2010, the committee sat to consider the bill and expressed its satisfaction on the division of revenue to the province. From the briefing and consideration, the following were raised: an absence of an allocation for the meat for the province, the appalling state of provincial roads which need serious attention, and insufficient and small budget allocation to the province which sometimes compromises service delivery. And the portfolio committee therefore requests that we then support the bill. Now, on bullet point one, chairperson, I interacted with the chairperson of the portfolio committee on finance, Mr. Lillard, as well as the committee secretary coordinator, indicating that on page 193, and we took them, I took them through the bill during the briefing, that the MIC allocation is stated there for the Northern Cape, the different municipalities. But this morning they phoned me and said that what about the cities on page 193? So I'm just giving that clarity. The second bullet regarding the provincial roads is an issue that's coming on for more than 5 years. But I also requested that the provincial legislature engage with the SFC, invite them to come and do a workshop, because for the past 4-5 years, the Northern Cape provincial legislature did not interact as a legislator with the SFC, maybe the MEC for finance and treasury, but not the legislature. That was in a letter that was written to the chairperson of the Select Committee of Finance by Dr. Sattai, chairperson of the FSC. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable DPR, that was not in Cape, also in support of the bill with those particular concerns for further consideration. I will now call upon Eastern Cape. May I also acknowledge in our midst the presence of Honorable Zimbabwe from Eastern Cape. Come again? Zimbabwe, I'm sorry. You are welcome, sir. You may now present the mandate of the province.
The consideration of the portfolio committee was basically on the content and the effect of the bill that was prepared on March 2020 by a person from the quested officials from National Treasury Board. And we also considered public hearings in all the different districts that we started in the 10th to the 12th of March 2010. The province vote in favor of the bill and wishes to raise the following concerns or matters for consideration. The first one, that there is a need to review the formula for the allocation of equitable shares, particularly the weighting given in the poverty component and the level of the growth in a particular zone. I think as far as this matter is concerned, fortunately enough, yesterday I was here when we debated some of the issues that we saw. So there will be no need of me to put some more emphasis on that. The second point that we are raising, which was also raised yesterday, is the question of the statistics for the 201 that was conducted by the University of South Africa is outdated and still has a disadvantaging factor in the allocation of the equitable share. Looking that, for instance, for the equitable share, also the number of students, learners is considered. But we notice that in a number of areas in the UK, this year disadvantages are quite a lot. The cross-boundary issues on the rural education program by EFCO need to be taken into consideration when calculating the total funding to be allocated to each and every program. If I can just explain here, Chair, one most important point for us in the UK, especially for those particular areas, where you have some kind of response between ourselves and KZN and the division that are made by ESCO. We have places in Mount Frere where that particular area belongs to the Eastern Cape, but according to ESCO demarcation, then it belongs to KZN. And then as far as the education of those, we understand that there's an allocation that is made directly to ESCO, but where you find out that ESCO is not, we can't be in a position that is to check whether ESCO really is what it's supposed to be doing. And those particular people, they will complain to the Eastern Cape that their area has not been electrified, but one other part of the same village is electrified by EFCON Eastern Cape. The other one is belongs to Cape Town. So that's why then, but there is some of the problems that we look at when those allocations are made that is to EFCON. Also, EFCON does not want to account that it is funding to residents when it's true. Those residents inquire from the municipalities about the program cross-boundary municipalities. Both ESCOM and municipalities should set aside on which area to electrify within that district or local municipality. ESCOM and municipalities should continuously monitor the ESCOM program. Here with respect to the motivation that I've already given. The location for drought relief has not seemed to take into consideration submissions that have been made by different municipalities. They have already been declared disaster areas that your creeper need is required in our province. The percentage of the total national revenue that is given to the local government sphere is insufficient given the fact that this is the sphere that is closest that is to the people. I think another point is that the motivation there can be some questions that we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. So, as you can see, and I will now call upon in Papua. May I request Honorable Mashida to read this for us in Papua.
The first chapter that I expected that was going to be with all probability.
Have you got that?
Chapter 10, I think Limpopo has actually presented almost a full report other than the what was required of the negotiating mandate. And I'm not sure whether you expect me to read the whole. But
perhaps you should go to consent and to commendation.
Yes, it's
in the mandate.
I think one will start on item number 3, that the NCOP permanent delegate together with National Treasury leads the portfolio committee on provincial treasury on the principle and provisions of the bill during a committee meeting held on the 10th of March 2010. It must, however, be noted by this House that the division of revenue is introduced on an annual basis. Then, skipping those, the findings, complete share. Then we go to item 3 on the report. On the basis of the findings that they have made, and then the concerns that they have raised, is that municipalities commit municipal infrastructure grants only to water and sanitation, and neglect other functions like roads, electricity, etc. That the equitable share from national to provinces does not seem to be addressing the backlog in terms of infrastructure and rural development. Facilities in Limpopo are under pressure due to more foreigners from Zimbabwe and other countries who are not part of the statistics in the province. Then provinces are taken for a ride by contract management, or rather contractors, especially in the construction of roads where government pays more than it should. Then the last bullet, water and sanitation is under pressure in the province and the country at large. Then item 4, dealing with recommendations. Then the committee then recommended the following chair. Government should consider more funding for infrastructure and rural development, taking into account the backlog and the rural nature of the province. Treasury should conduct a detailed analysis on the capital spending trends on infrastructure development, water and sanitation grants with specific conditions should be established. Government should ensure that municipalities are capacitated on the administration of conditional grants in order to meet the Millennium Development Goals. The formula for the equitable share should be reviewed to accommodate the challenges facing the Limpopo province, in particular, facilities in Limpopo under pressure due to more foreigners from Zimbabwe and other countries who are not part of the statistics in the province. Given the unique situation in the province, as outlined above, census should be conducted every 5 years instead of 10 years in order to give accurate statistics timelines. Then bullet 5, the portfolio committee having considered the bill hereby confer a negotiating mandate to the National Council of Province Permanent Delegates to negotiate in favor of the bill with recommendations. Signed by Comrade Rosina Kumina, Chair of the Portfolio Committee on Provincial Treasury. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mashida. That was Limpopo, also in support of the bill, and with those particular concerns and recommendations, I'm told that the Gauteng mandate is being sent through the Secretary of Finance, is going to quickly get them. Meantime, may I allow Honorable Harris to raise a point you wanted to raise on your mandate earlier on?
Thank you, Chair. It's in the form of a question to National Treasury. by my count, 3 out of the provinces so far have raised concerns about data issues. Some of them have spoken about outdated data. One of them, and that would be my province, the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, and Limpopo. One of them recommends that census should take place more regularly. Another one, I think it was Limpopo, referred to the fact that 2001 data is driving some of the formula. My request is that if National Treasury could very briefly and at a very simple level run us through, with regard to the provincial equitable share and the six components of the share, what year the relevant data comes from for each of those components, obviously excluding the institutional component, which isn't data-driven. So the five remaining components, if they could just give us a view on which year the data comes from.
Thank you. Is there any point of clarity on presentation made so far? Honorable Monsisi and Honorable Mashida.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, Chairperson, on the I think it's the Limpopo. The Limpopo submission on page 3. The first bullet of concern they raise issues from municipality that they need to study infrastructure plans only for water sanitation and that they don't use it for other functions like roads, electricity and so on. I thought what federally made this to the province or directly even to the municipality, they become very specific with respect to the land function. Now, if the municipalities in the Limpopo, like we have seen in other areas, where a grant is for all the municipalities for something else, I'm not quite sure what responsibility it should be, because, yes, the province raises as a concern and as a conflict to say this to ourselves. It is not the duty of the province, for instance, to ensure that the local municipalities utilize the MIT for the system. Yeah, that is just one. And then, two chapters. Yeah, the recent proposal is very, very specific and very clear. The only problem I have with the submission, with due respect, Honorable Minister, is the point. The point is very small and they raise very important issues. And if they want to increase in their grant, I think they should also increase their point.
We are still raising priorities, Honorable Members. And then.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I've got about three issues to raise, Chair. One is that across all the submissions we have received, there is a particular format that one is seeing on this negotiating mandate. But then you've got other provinces that have actually embarked on another format. And I just wanted to raise this matter that if the general format that I'm seeing, it is what the NCOP has communicated to the provinces to present the negotiating mandate in a particular format, and then we should get them in the same format. And I think that is what we need to be doing. And then the second issue, it was just a consequence of what Comrade Dennis has already alluded to in terms of the MIG. I think it just simply to put a bit of more flesh is that the MIG is up to the municipality to actually use all of the windows on the MIG program to apply for the fund. And then whether it is for a community hall or whatever, all sorts of things, there is a whole spectrum of municipalities that the municipalities can apply. But the problem is that some other services, municipalities don't have the capacity to be able to apply for those funds. Like if they want to apply for the funds, they must see the number of people that must be in a hall and all those things for funding. Now they don't do that. They always go for these easy things of 1 kilometer of road, of streets, and then water, sanitation. And that's what they ended up applying. But there is all these other things that they can apply for, sports fields and all these. But the municipalities are not doing it because the kind of applications that they must do, the business plan, is a little bit difficult rather than the usual water, which they just do the cut and paste and submit on an annual basis. That's why I just wanted to put a little bit more flesh. But also, that doesn't underscore the request of Comrade Ben to get more clarity from the treasurer. Then the third issue which I just wanted to raise is the mandate from KZN, Comrade Chair.
Are you still raising charities? Don't engage first.
Yeah.
I can hear you've got a temptation to engage.
No.
I just only want clarity so that when treasurer responds, they respond to all the issues that is raised.
I wouldn't know what I want to raise about the mandate of KZN, whether it's you're going to regard it as a clarity or as a discussion. Because I'm just raising the problem with the date. Because it looks like they finalized the mandate on the 11th. And then they had briefings, I think, on the 9th. And the issue in relation to public hearing.
Honorable.
Yeah. Chairperson, thank you also to Treasury. Regarding the monitoring of the spending on conditional grants by municipalities. During December, I want to give a case study. During the first 2 weeks of December, municipalities were in dire straits. I think there were 17 of them, where the third quarter equitable share was paid over. Because municipalities didn't spend the conditional grant money for the 06, 07, the 07, 08 years, like Tommy's back. At what stage does Treasury intervene to tell them that you owe, you are not spending, etc.? What is the process? Why only wait until December 2009 and then say we are going to withhold the third quarter equitable share? If you Treasury could explain that. Secondly, Chairperson, regarding the formula for the allocation to gravel roads in provinces, the maintenance thereof. I speak for the Northern Cape. The Free State is in the same situation, your own province. How do they work out that allocation? Because in my province, Chairperson, we've got very few tar roads, and the condition of the gravel roads, which are very poor, affect service delivery. Again, a case study. You travel from Garish to Honaker Bay, 95 kilometers, gravel road, the ambulance are late, the police van are late to attend to cases that were given to them. Even people died that had to get medical attention or medical service. It happened. And I put this because we must address it for the future. Also seeing that the formula is going to be reviewed. But this must get serious attention because it affects the people out there. Lastly, Chairperson, Eastern Cape, the issue regarding ESCOM. I want to propose that this committee calls in ESCOM to come and explain to us as a committee that cross-border issues regarding electricity supply, because it's also concerning Northwest Northern Cape in the vicinity of Pampierska, Tawum, and Masakeng in Yankemdo. What we did in Yankem, we called the ESCOM through the Municipal Ward Committee to address the public. It was a Municipal Ward Committee meeting, and we cleared some issues there. But I think that I propose that we call ESCOM to this committee to come and explain, and that we get a solution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Dibier. May I, before I allow Treasury to respond to some of the concerns raised and this, allow Honourable Mungisi to read the negotiating mandate of Gauteng. While the attachment is the report, we will only deal with the negotiating mandate. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, I want to read the whole document. I will just read the introduction and one paragraph from the process and then go to page 5.9 on the new conditional terms and then from there to the presentation. If it's in order. A report on the division of the 2010 section. The chairperson of the Finance Portfolio Committee, Pan Frozen Hall, was okay with the report on the negotiating mandate of the Division of Revenue Bill. The Division of Revenue Bill is a section 26 bill, which provides for the equitable division of revenue anticipated to be raised nationally among the national, provincial, and local field of government for 2010-2011 financial. The total revenue raised and to be shared among the three fields of government amounts to 818 billion in the 2010-2011 financial, increasing to 828 billion in 2011-12 and then 964 in 2012-13 respectively. The process follows. The Speaker of the Housing Provincial
I suggest you skip that one on our notes.
I wanted to read that one paragraph, but it's fine. I can skip it then. You can guide me, Professor.
Okay.
Page 5.
Point 10.
Page 5. Portfolio committee recommendations on the division of revenue. 1. The finance portfolio committee is of the view that the provincial equitable share formula should respond to the social economic challenges and the growing conflict of housing and follow the costed norms approach. During my presentation, Chairperson, what was raised something that is commonly understood to be the problem of the with the Zimbabwean coming in. But now, the problem with Gauteng is that everybody comes from our own provinces and then also from outside. So, again, the problem becomes the skewed death from the South Africa. And then once the allocation takes place, obviously it doesn't get good. That was the issue that was there. And then 2, the provincial equitable share is mainly driven by the population trend, which is derived from the center. And this poses a problem of handling. As a result, PDL distribution potentially under allocated provincial distribution in problem. That experience migration migration like in the area of conflict. The portfolio committee is of the view that the province should stabilize the revenue generated before entertaining borrowing, especially on non-capital projects. But the first point which is to highlight that what should be taken into cognizance in the policy of allocation if some of these relatives that they were your cause of occupation, not because of your own. And the last point, Chairperson, if you could kindly require your admin staff to operate because housing actually provide them with a legal court last week, and your staff for sure.
Just for the record, Honorable Montes, may I ask you to read the top part of the negotiating mandate?
On page one.
The negotiating mandate, the chair of the Select Committee on Finance, Honorable Yen, name of the bill, Division of Revenue Bill, Section 76, number of bills, report in 10, date of deliberation, 12 March 2010, vote of the legislature. The Housing Provincial Legislature supports the principles and the details of the bill, and therefore votes in favor of the division of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Montisi. That was Gauteng in support of the bill with the same concern around the formula of the equitable share out instead data. I would now then request Treasury to respond. I'm not sure when how you are going to respond. There are those provinces that just support it without any concern, and then there are those that make support with regard to concern. Some of the concerns raised, I know they have been over and over been explained during the process of the briefing by Treasury last 2 weeks, but we still want to again. I don't think it will be boring to hear you again repeating yourself again today on some of those issues. You can proceed, maybe preferably if you can take them province by province.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to deal with these issues, and that's probably what I need to do first, is before we actually go into the province, which I will be doing, is actually there's a few things that generally got a common theme that I think is important to deal with, and sometimes using acronyms or short words sometimes creates confusion as well. We often refer to the equitable share. The equitable share can actually then refer to the provincial equitable share, or it can refer to the local government equitable share. And sometimes the main matter about the local government equitable share appears then to be seen as applicable to the provincial equitable share, which is not necessarily the case. And maybe before I actually go into the details to actually then define what data is used in the provincial equitable share and what data is used in the local government equitable share, maybe just to highlight some of the data issues that we need to take into consideration. That's extremely important for the committee as well. Firstly, to ensure credibility and that the models that's used are beyond reproach and not open to legal challenge, the best approach to use is to use officially endorsed data in the country. There's one source that's currently available in that regard, and that's Statistics South Africa. So when the formulas were implemented from the start, that philosophy has actually been put down. That only credible data must be used in the formula that can be verifiable, justifiable, and clear, be it for an individual municipality or individual province. So with respect to data as well, if you look at data to collect or to make assumptions about national government, or make a say, for example, this is GDP growth in the country, it's quite easy. Because even if it's a survey, what a survey means, you don't collect data for each and every collection point. What you do is you take a number of samples, you actually collect it, you then link it to other type of realities. Saying if this is the case in this survey, and you take a similar situation, we didn't do the survey, given that assumption, they would be the same, and therefore you assume that the same criteria will apply. Therefore, with regard to provinces, because there's 9 provinces in the country, it's quite justifiable, and the data that you actually get out of the survey is generally quite robust and applicable to provinces, because there's so many samples that the type of assumptions that you make in the end can always ask if there's an error, and the data that you then use are quite reliable. Often there's low status in the end of the day because the census is done only every 10 years. It's correct, pointed out that the disposals noted that it should be done every 5 years. But the issue that's important is that with regard to local government, there's 283 municipalities. And that is where the problem comes in with survey. That is basically, if you want reliable data, you need the census. Surveys need to be very, very large to become appropriate for local government. And if you look at the Annex W1 that provides a detailed explanation on the data that's used, it actually explains why the 2007 community survey data can actually create bigger problems than actually using the 2001 census data. But the point taken there is that there's a need to actually deal with that issue has been acknowledged, and I'll deal with that when I go to the local government equitable share formula review. With regard to the provincial equitable share, if I can just highlight 2 pages in Annex W1 that deals with it. It's pages 67 at the bottom. The last paragraph, and I can read it, but it actually indicates the data that's used. But the latest data, or the oldest data used in the provincial equitable share data, is the 2007 gross domestic product per region. All the other data is generally 2008 or 2009, so it's relatively updated. And if you then look at, for example, the education component in the equitable share, that accounts 51%, health is 26%, basic share 14%, poverty is 3%, economic activity is 1%, and institutional is 5%. And then if you then look at, for example, the education component, it uses currency to determine the allocation, the size of the school age population, which is people of 2 children between the age of 5 and 17, and the number of learners in grade R to 12 enrolled in public ordinary schools. The data used there, and that is the only exception where the census data is not used, where we get information from the National Department of Education, it's now the National Department of Basic Education, is the 2009 school reality survey. If you look at the health share, it's predominantly based on the 2008 household survey, as well as the 2009 mid-year population estimate. And it deals also with the concern raised by Hossein with regard to the data. In the provincial equitable share, the 2009 mid-year population estimate was used and not the 2001 census. Where the concern is valid is that in the municipal equitable share, with the 2001 census data was used. And then if you look at the other components as well, the basic share, mostly based on the 2009 mid-year population estimates, the poverty component, again based on the mid-year population estimates, and the economic output component, which makes 1% of the formula based on the 2007 GDPR. And the reason why some of the data is not 2009 is that these surveys are not necessarily done every year, and even if it's done every year, it takes some time for the other year for that essay to actually produce the data. So what we do is when the formula is determined, we use contact that essay and we ensure that we get the latest available data. Because they also, when it's a survey, it needs to be done, go through quite a number of cleansing exercises to ensure that it's actually fair and correct. Hopefully that answers that question. But just taking it forward with regard to, because a number of queries are raised with regard to the need of the provincial equitable share formula as well as the municipal equitable share formula. And it's actually quite interesting to note that there's two provinces that say the provincial equitable share formula is unfair. And the Western Cape would argue, for example, that their allocation is unfair because it's underfunded because of these, and they would list urban reasons for it being underfunded. In Limpopo and Eastern Cape, being rural provinces predominantly, would use other arguments in the formula. But if you look at the current provincial equitable share formula, it's both got an urban bias as well as a rural bias. If you look at the components, there's economic activity component, which is weighted at 1%, and a poverty component, which has got a slightly higher weighting of 3%. And those components are specifically there to actually address the anomalies between the urban and the rural areas. But the issues raised are noted, and we are currently busy, as you've indicated, a number of times during these hearings, that a full-scale provincial equitable share formula review will be undertaken. Also raised the issue with the DBT responsible for the unit, and that the committee has requested that we also be alerted of these developments rather sooner rather than later in the process. Then with regard to the local government equitable share, again, a number of concerns are raised. Again, this is exactly the same type of challenges, but even what makes it more complicated is the really the data issue. It's something that we cannot do something about. And it's always, there's a reason, originally the censuses were every 5 years. And there was a very specific reason why it was decided to make it every 10 years. And it's the cost involved in undertaking a census. It's exceptionally high, and it's costing a substantial amount of money. And based on that reason, the decision has been made to have it every 10 years. And it's got huge implications for the local government equitable share formula. And one of the issues that we will be looking at for the 2011 budget, if there's not some way that we can actually start linking the 2001 census data with the 2007 community survey data. But we cannot just use the 2007 community data as is because of the tools that it's got. Again, there's another assumption that's often made, is if we change the data, we'll have a higher population and we'll necessarily get more money. That's a very wrong assumption because if you look at both the provincial equitable share and the local government equitable share, there's X amount of money available. And for example, say you're in a municipality in a rural province and your population increases by, say, 3%. That municipality will automatically assume a 3% increase in the equitable share. But then you need to compare it against, Ekwene, for example, over the same period had a population growth of 10%. So what will happen is that the municipality with a 3% growth rate can actually have a reduced allocation if all other municipalities compared to the average had a higher population growth than that municipality concerns. So the formulas are slightly more intricate than just basing on a population growth. There's other factors that also need to be taken into account. And that's why it's extremely important that this issue that's raised, that smaller municipalities are underfunded, needs specific attention. Because what the current formula does is that because it's largely population-based, it will always favor the larger municipalities because of that bias. And the issue is that it's more the smaller municipalities that actually get crowded out because the more money is available because of that share that the municipality has, it automatically favors them. And that's one of the reasons why the revenue raising component in the equitable share formula has been introduced to take into account that it's particularly the larger municipalities that have got huge scope to actually raise their own revenues. Again, those types of issues will be taken into account into the review of the local government equitable share formula as well. But it will always be an issue of how can we actually justify equity. And equity means, or fairness, means that you treat municipalities and provinces is the same, in the same way, and that the allocations are fair if you compare all allocations against each other, which is quite complicated because I think it comes to 283 municipalities. But for example, the issue about the population will definitely be captured in the review, and the issue about the funding of smaller municipalities, particularly institutional components, will also be taken up in the review. Then I'll finish with my general remarks. So it will actually facilitate and assist actually answering some of the provincial questions, because then I can skip over it quite quickly. With regard to the issues raised by Mpumalanga province, the issue about timing, I don't think National Treasury needs to respond to that one. I think it's part of another process that needs to deal with that one. With regard to the issue about the assisting poor performing municipalities and shifting funds and rollovers, this is issue, it's not a new issue that's been raised, and it was raised by both the Select Committee and the Standing Committee. And the formal response to that query is given in Annex 8 to the budget review. And during our presentations to the Select and the Standing Committee, we raised those issues as well. But what it basically says, should I quickly read to it or just refer to that section?
That's okay.
Okay, so that issue has already been dealt with. And with regard to the criteria and allocations for free grants, it makes it slightly difficult to deal with the fair share, give a fair share, if you don't know the reason why they're saying it's unfair. Again, what I would like to do is just refer you to the foundational grant framework that actually deals with it, and it's on pages 116 and 108. Of the review and the annexes. For example, the human settlements grant, it sets the criteria on how to allocate it, but it's basically based on housing needs, weighted at 90%, and the developmental potential, which is weighted 10%. So housing backlogs are taken into account on a fair and equitable way, because it's done the same for all provinces based on their specific data, and it's based on actual backlogs. With regard to the HIV and AIDS blood pool allocation, because it's linked to education, the allocation is also based in terms of the equitable share component. The education component is in the provincial equitable share. All provinces are treated in the same manner. The allocation is determined. With regard to the comprehensive HIV and AIDS grant, and you can find the answer on page 108 in the conditional grant framework, but it's based on antenatal HIV prevalence, estimated share of AIDS cases, and the population post demarcation. Again, it's data that links to how a province will need to respond to HIV and AIDS. Of HIV and AIDS. So, in our view, that the criteria put down, really does speak to the needs and the funding needs of individual problems to deal with this issue. Most probably another issue that needs to be dealt with is with regard to the last one. And we've raised that issue during the committee hearings as well, is that you get different types of conditional grants. There's what we refer to as a Schedule 4 grant and a Schedule 5 grant. If you look at a Schedule 4 grant, it's what is referred to as a supplementary allocation. So it's never meant for the grant to fund the full expenditure of that program, it's a contribution. And then you get a specific purpose grant, which then deals with the grant in full. If you want to see how a grant is classified, if you look at the Division of Revenue Bill, it is attached to the bill and it starts on page 36 of the Division of Revenue Bill. It highlights which are supplementary grants, which then means the province must put in its own money. And regard to the others, it is more exclusive. The data on the HIV-AIDS grant is updated with the latest available data as well. So I think it's important to that. Then with regard to free space, I think that one is relatively new. With regard to the Western Cape, my long explanation in the beginning, I think, should have addressed all your questions. With regard to KZN, that's easy to answer that one. Then with regard to Northwest, again, there's a number of issues raised here as well. It's again linked back, but here's also a bit more specific, the issue about where a problem goes, on the budget of the province. It's correct, it does impact on the budget of the province, because Merakong is shifted from Northwest to Gauteng. But the issue is, because it's shifted, the Merakong is shifted from Northwest to Gauteng, Gauteng must not pick up the tag with regards to expenditure in the Merakong. So any clinic in Merakong, any education facility in Merakong, is now for the bill of the Gauteng province. So that reduction is necessary for that specific reason. Then with regard to Northern Cape, I think there's an important issue that I need to deal with there as well. And I'm going to need to provide a bit of detail to ensure that, again, we avoid confusion, because there's two types of capacity support when it comes to conditional grants. For example, you have a case where a national department determines an allocation to a province. Let's say the school nutrition program, which is a very good example. What then happens is that in part of that conditional grant framework, there's provision made for the province to actually administer that grant. The very specific reason, school nutrition is a provincial responsibility. In order to do that, the province is required to take administration and the night monitor that the food actually gets to the school children and the like. What is also important there, it is therefore money that all the provincial functions used by the province, both in terms of executing it but also administering it. It's got, what happens if you look at the conditional, the fiscal framework, it gets a page, but it's in a number of places in our documentation. But it contains a schedule that which reflects the national allocation. And then under that, it's got an allocation, provincial allocation, and under that, it's got equitable share conditional grant, and under that, it's got local government allocation, you've got the fuel levy there, you've got the equitable share again, and the conditional grant allocation. It's very important because what that does is indicate what is the share that national government gets, what's the share that provinces get, and what's the share that local government gets. If you therefore make a conditional grant available to municipalities and you want to earmark an allocation to a province, for example, it takes the money away from the municipality and you give it to the government. So therefore you will not get a municipal infrastructure grant where a provision is made that the province can actually use it for their own administration. That type of expenditure needs to be funded out of the provincial equitable share. And therefore, there's not that provision made. If you, for example, look at the national government department, you will see that in the national department, there will be the conditional grant that goes to the province, for example, and then you'll get specifically earmarked money on the national department but specifically linked to the administration. That is to ensure that, and it's part of the national government department budget. So what needs to be happen when provinces actually do their budget, they need to actually take into account that provinces have got a responsibility to monitor and support municipalities. And they need to appropriate the focus and to allocate sufficient money to the focus provincial departments to execute that mandate. We cannot use the conditional grant system to achieve that. Then with regard to the second one, it was not, I think that there's the hearings in Northwest, so the issue about the provincial roads is not an issue that was just raised by the Northern Cape, by the Northwest province, and agreed that this issue is a serious issue of concern, that provincial roads need attention. Just as a matter of interest, we've just recently looked at the data with regard to how much money is spent by provinces on the maintenance of roads. And so we took actually a provincial infrastructure budget and specifically looked at how much money provinces will be making available for roads over the next 3 years. And that's nearly 49 billion over the next 3 years. So they do make money available. So the question is, yes, they make money available, but what should the money be? Again, it's important to note that that issue is one of the issues that will be determined for the review of the provincial equitable share formula. Then with regard to the insufficient and small budget, I'll try to deal with that issue when I start with my presentation. Then with regard to the Eastern Cape, again, the first one is the equitable share which we dealt with. The second one is the specific ESA issue that I've already dealt with. It's not that this one is not applicable to the provincial equitable share, but it's not government execution. Then 3.3 and 3.4 should be read together, and that answer was already given. A proposal was made on how to deal with that issue. Then with regard to the draft relief issue, there is a very structured process on how a disaster is dealt with. It was also a query raised during the Katrina hearing. When a disaster happens, a disaster can be classified as a municipal disaster or local disaster, a provincial or regional disaster, and then a national disaster. If a disaster is classified as a national disaster, then that process kicks in where submissions are then made to the National Disaster Management Centre, which then analyses that request. There's a very specific budget process in terms of reach that is dealt with as well. Those submissions are then submitted, generally addressed through the adjustment budget process. It's sometimes allocated just for 1 year, and sometimes it's allocated over a 2 year period. That means during the adjustment budget as well as the subsequent financial year. Then with regard to the last one, it's already been dealt with as well. Then with regard to the Muskoka, if you look at the first query, which says government should consider more funding for infrastructure and rural development, taking into account the backlog and the rural nature of the province. If you took you through the provincial equitable share formula, which indicates that the formula does have a rural component or poverty component. And if you look at most of the conditional grants, specifically as it relates to the infrastructure side as well, it does take into account in backlogs and it's used to determine allocation. Then the second issue, but I think maybe before I jump to the second one as well, it's not just an allocation issue, it's also a spending issue. When money goes through to provinces, particularly if it goes through the provincial equitable share, the province that makes the decision where that money is actually utilised and how much they allocate towards education and health compared, for example, to agriculture. And it is an issue that's been raised as a major concern that agriculture and rural development needs to receive more priority. But it's not necessarily just a funding issue from the system. It is an issue that spending is not taken need to also look at the spending on the foundational grants, for example, for agriculture, to actually determine that, that there is spending problems and a capacity problem spending. Then the second one is of the future work for the next budget that we're taking to undertake a detailed analysis. The next one, the water and sanitation grant issue should be established. And I would just like clarity as well, because if you look at the current grant systems in the system, and you look at the municipal infrastructure grant, for example, it's got a water and sanitation component. I'm just trying to get the page. But the majority of the money in the municipal infrastructure grant actually goes towards water and sanitation. Here's the page, please. It's the detail of the municipal infrastructure grant formula contains on pages 87 and 88 of the Annexure W1. And it gives a breakdown of the components and exactly the components, how they're funded. So the D component consists of water and sanitation, electricity, roads and other, where water is allocated to 72% share, roads is allocated to 23% share, and others allocated to 5% share within the 75% share, because there's other components in the formula as well. So that's how the formula is allocated. But how municipalities spend that money is also a municipal choice. And the proposal was made that certain norms and standards or prescribed minimum amounts or percentages be prescribed on how much, for example, be allocated to water and sanitation. And that can be very dangerous, and that is, for that reason it hasn't been implemented. Because municipalities are very, very different. You will have a case where a municipality will have large water and sanitation backlogs. There's no sense to prescribe a high backlog. But you'll get another municipality, for the historical reasons, would have very strong water and sanitation, but no electricity, for example, or their roads would be completely messed up. And then you'll get municipalities where everything is basically infrastructure and everything. So if you start prescribing norms and standards, then you're actually pushing certain expenditures above others. And that's why it's very important that those types of expenditure be guided by a municipal integrated development plan in terms of things. And what the focus should be is actually on strengthening those integrated development plans and actually ensuring that it's actually linked to budget and expenditure on the relevant types of where the backlogs are. Then the issue about the equitable share has already been dealt with, and then the issue about the census has been noted as well. And then with regard to funding, the first one I've dealt with, the second one I've dealt with, and then the third one is supported, which recommends that the province should stabilize the revenue generated, their own revenue before entertaining borrowing, which is a very good proposal.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Just before I allow for nature break, I would invite questions for clarity. The one question I have myself, Wendy, is, I don't know if I've structured it well, but is, how does this formula on the equitable share, both at provincial and at local level, help provinces and municipalities to mitigate on the impact of migration of people from other countries into our country, as well as the internal movement of people from one province to another in search of jobs, with now the trend being that whilst I can move from Free State searching for job and get job in Gauteng, I also stay in Gauteng and get a house in Gauteng. While I still have got my own house again in Gauteng. I would like to hear your views on those two. Honorable Mashile.
Yeah, the same chairperson. That's why yesterday, Chair, when we were discussing with the FFC, one said that it looks like we need some more time to actually talk to some of the rationale that the FFC and the Treasury are basing some of the conclusions that they are making in terms of funding. Because, Chairperson, I'll tell you that when you put a 2-kilometer pipeline in Kwamashu, that 2-kilometer pipeline would make a lot of people accessing water in that pipe. But when you go to Mpumalanga, especially on the high belt, you put 1 kilometer of pipeline, then it says about 300 people. Because you've got a village on the farm, which has got about 50 houses only. And when you go to the next village, it's about 20 kilometers from that one. And if you have to link them, because you've got only one source of clean water, then you have to build about 20 kilometers of pipeline in between the two villages. But the minute if you have provided funds on the basis of population figures only, then it doesn't help you. Because then you can't account for these 20 kilometers between two villages. We just got 300 people each. And these are some of the things that we have to debate seriously, especially in relation to municipalities or provinces with municipalities that are rural and they don't have high concentration of villages and these villages are apart from each other. Then the formula that we are using in Treasury, they need to talk to those things. And also, like as we have indicated with Northern Cape yesterday, is that a municipality which is having these kinds of villages 20 kilometers from each other, when you have to put administration to municipal administration, you have to put an office in all those little corners. Because to run it from one center, then you'll be driving about 50 kilometers to actually go and check a complaint of a pipe bed. 50 kilometers. When you come back, then you have met all the money. But because of the small population figures, then you get small funding from these formulas that the Treasury is using. I don't expect an answer now, but all what one is saying is that we need some more time and workshop time where we can actually interrogate some of these rationale that the Treasury is using. Thank you.
Yeah, Comrade Chairperson, I really welcome the responses from Treasury. They actually listed a lot of issues in the perspective. Now, the question I have, I don't know if it should be a question that should be getting now, but it also in terms of the allocations to the local municipality. You have the CFO and the financial manager within the MM who don't want to adhere to perspective in accounting financially. And deliberately so. And they run down the municipality. They cannot account in their own statement in terms of the income and expenditure. They go through training, they come back, they don't want to practice what they have learned. Because obviously if they practice what they have learned, it will be clear that they have to learn that is doing other things in the kitchen. Now, Treasury has been responsible across the country to empower the CFO always send the FM, including the FM, in those hinterland municipalities to capacitate them to be able to deliver. But Treasury right now also has a means or the type of report that we have, that there is no will, you know, within some of these municipalities in order to make, because there is another agenda. Now, the question is it possible for Treasury, taking into cognizance the municipal finance management and the constitution, or whatever legislation that is applicable, is it possible for Treasury to utilize its own personnel on a full-time basis in those municipalities which have this type of capacity to run the finances of those municipalities, while other contingency plans are being looked at in order to get the right people in at the end of the day? Because we know that we come here, we second and we go back to check how the funds are used. I mean, we know those municipalities that are going to improve. So I'm looking at the capacity that finance has. Right now, you'd find finance people in Mpumalanga, right in the bushes. You'd find them in Upington, you know. You'd find them in Limpopo, everywhere. They are there and they're doing it in order to do it. Now my question is, what would it take in terms of legislation for finance people to take over these alien municipalities so that we can be able to do it? Thank you.
Thank you, Sisi.
Thanks, Jefferson. Let me say also, I welcome the response to the Mpumalanga issue on adequate funding, especially for the HIV and some of those grants. And I just want to put one a little point in relation to the query that. As much as the Treasury may be using statistics or population figures, but when it comes to this HIV and some other diseases, cholera and you name them, in the Mpumalanga area it is not necessarily that it can be determined in terms of population figures only. The rurality of the province, especially in the low veld, and with the warm temperatures, you know, it's almost right across the whole year, they usually aggravate the problem. And again, the access to healthcare, the areas in the Mkomazi areas where people are staying miles away from clinics have no access to information. Those particular areas you can't compare in the urban area. Even if they may be having the same number of people in a particular village, but because those people, they don't have access to their health information, and also the low economic activity that presents those people with much time of interaction and socialization, it actually makes them more vulnerable than in developed provinces or urban areas. So that's what it is actually being called upon, that these are some of the factors that you must factor in when you actually make the final determination, because you are comparing two things that are not comparable, although is that they may be having certain factors that look the same, but they have additional factors that make them seriously different, that when you consider them, you will reach totally different outcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Honor. Masile, Rosalie.
Thank you very much. With regard to the data issues, although the question is posed, and I suppose the department best place to actually answer that question would be the Department of Statistics. So it could be useful for them to make a presentation on this issue. But just with regard to the specific query raised, with regard to internal movement, it will be picked up in the midterm population estimates, but it will be a question of a year lag because it's it's a bit of a lag because the survey is done and then it's processed and then it's only factored in and then it will be factored in the next equitable share allocation. But the time lag is relatively short. With regard to the query of the other countries, that's a bit of a controversial question because the question is, are they legal or illegal? And that will actually change the response as well. If they're legal, they will also be picked up in terms of the survey and then factored into the next year. Then with regard to the second question, it's definitely a very good question and it will require bit of a lengthy response. And it actually explains one of the reasons why some of the conditional grants have been introduced because of some of the problems that have been experienced. And one of the issues that we've experienced in the past is exactly that the municipal infrastructure grant just factors into the fact that you take into account the infrastructure that's needed with regard to the more retail component with minor bulk infrastructure. If you then look at the service delivery backlog, if you look at the bulk infrastructure backlog, particularly if you need to do it on a regional basis where it overarches more than one municipality, you do sit with a huge problem. And that's one of the reasons why the regional bulk infrastructure grant has been introduced. It specifically deals with the social, economic component, or the social infrastructure needs, so that means to the poor, not the economic component where business gets the benefit, specifically to deal with cross-cutting bulk infrastructure where the cost is too high to be catered for in the municipal infrastructure, and it's also not specific to an individual municipality. That's another reason also why the rural household infrastructure grant has been introduced, which will start this financial year, and it will basically take the form of pilot to actually explore alternatives. And that's where infrastructure in terms of the conventional connecting infrastructure options are not viable. And actually explore that and then start duplicating in other rural areas as well, as the lessons learned can actually then be replicated. And for example, for water, it would be something like these connector water harvesting type of solutions that will be explored. Sanitation solutions also need to be explored because those type of challenges, in certain cases, it's from a financial perspective, it does not justify the cost to need to be incurred. Millions and millions to connect one household is not a viable option. Those households could wait forever. And therefore, the municipal infrastructure grant is therefore then complemented by these other type of conditional grants, specifically to start dealing with the issues that the municipal infrastructure grant is not catered to be doing. But having said that, it's also important that these types of issues be taken forward as we review the municipal infrastructure grant financing system as well. And we've already started with a process to start differentiating on how you fund the infrastructure of the different types of municipalities. For example, the concern that the municipal infrastructure grant just focuses on the population with backlogs has resulted in municipalities with small populations getting very small municipal infrastructure grants. So about 2 years, 3 years ago, the school number the third year, a minimum municipal infrastructure grant allocation has been introduced to ensure that no municipality will receive less than 5 million municipal infrastructure grants. In the beginning, because just a few population sites, some municipalities didn't even get enough money or would barely be able to build a garage with the amount of money they used to receive. So that type of problem was addressed. But it doesn't mean that we do not need to, when we go forward, actually explore on how we can further refine the system to actually specifically address these type of challenges in the system. Then with regard to the third one, the capacity issue and national treasury and provincial treasury taking over from municipalities and the legal provisions for that. Yes, there is legal provision for that in various pieces of legislation. It's part in the constitution. The first one that can be done is section 139, where that authority is actually given for a national department or a province firstly to take over a municipality if the section 139 is followed. Of course, it requires quite a lot of approval processes. It cannot just be done willy-nilly. There's certain time limits for that process that needs to be adhered to. There's also a process if it's not done on provincial level, at the second level, then national can do that. But that's the most extreme example. There's more watered down solutions as well, where there's more agreements where that is done, where the municipality, for example, would say to the provincial treasury, or you know, we're having huge financial challenges, please come help us. And it's a more informal type of agreement. It doesn't, the structure is there. But just also bearing in mind, we're just focusing here on the financial side. But there's other type of municipal failures that's just as important, and, or even more important in certain cases, the service delivery failures. For example, what do you do if there's a water lack? Then the sector deposits, that type of intervention. There's provision for that as well. Then with regard to the Mpumalanga issue and the issues raised, definitely those issues will be taken forward as well. As because, remember, I recently pointed out that we're busy with the provincial equitable share formula review. And the whole financing of the education sector will be looked at, the whole financing of the education, health, roads will be looked at, the institutional components. So we're going to look at it. It's not possible to actually, the current data that's used, really, it's a lot more sophisticated data that will actually even ensure that there's more equity in the allocations and how the allocations are done. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Wendy. I'll request that we have a 10-minute break and come back and wrap up our meeting. We will attend for 10 minutes now. Thank you. All inclusive break.
Yeah, must have not like those applications about 20 years there. Too many performance, they are off. They are off that energy.
You know what I was thinking? It seems this data issue is a binary issue. But I don't think National Treasury is at liberty to finalize responses to it. I think what we need, because this is an issue.
And I'd like also to thank Wendy from Treasury for all the responses to our questions as well as those raised by provinces. I think throughout our this process of engaging with provinces and departments, there are quite a few issues that come out as issues of serious concern that perhaps will be expected as the committee to reflect on in our final report and recommendations to the House, that being the involvement of provinces in the processes of in the review processes of this equitable share, since it is done on annual basis, so that each and every province get involved and understand how these things are done and raise their issues there long before the allocations are done. I think we should also, the other thing that came out strong, also including in our visits on different capacities to provinces, is the plight of those municipalities that does not have a revenue base and we are genuinely poor in terms of the allocation that are done to such municipalities. I think something needs to be done on that. I think we'll have also to apply our minds on that and make some views on that. I have actually identified three things. Yes, the issue relating to conditional grants to municipalities. What throughout keep on coming back to us is the fact that despite the fact that there was clarity on the processes that are followed, how the department assists municipalities in understanding and knowing and being aware of the processes of how to access some of the grants. But if you go to these deep rural municipalities and small municipalities in the Eastern Cape, in the Northern Cape, and to a certain extent Northwest and Limpopo, Mpumalanga, you still find that some of the grants, let alone the fact that they are there in the document, but municipalities are not aware of them. And if they are aware, they are not aware of the procedure to be followed to have access to those. What is even worse, I think, is the fact that some municipalities use this grant for the purposes not intended to. In the case of those that are poor and who depend 100% on grants, they would use grants to pay salaries and stuff and all those things and do other things. I think an example has been done in Limpopo where grants meant for water and whatever and sanitation is used to do certain things. So those are some of the things that perhaps need to be investigated and a proper... some people were advocating the fact that other grants need to be ring-fenced and be given to municipalities with strict conditions so that they assist in terms of what we want to achieve insofar as service deliveries are concerned. So those are some of the issues that I've picked up as we have been deliberating on the Division of Revenue Bill. Now, honourable members, my proposal is that yesterday we have circulated a draft report on the work that we have been doing just to provoke our minds and so that we come up with ideas in terms of going forward. I want to suggest that I know that we might not have all had the opportunity of going through the document and making thorough recommendations, that we agree that we'll read the document and make written submissions to the secretary that will have to be included in the second draft report that we'll deal with next week in Limpopo. And if we all agree, it will be much more appreciated if such written submissions can be done by this Friday so that the secretary can find a way of including them in that report. And next week, Monday, we all have the copies of the second draft so that we prepare ourselves for the final draft that will be dealt with when we deal with final mandates next week, Wednesday, yes. The 23rd is Tuesday evening, okay. On the 23rd. We'll be having our meeting from 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock in the evening in Limpopo. Honorable Masoziwe and Honorable Mashile.
No, my comment is a small one around the meeting in the Limpopo. Facilitators must be aware that we're not necessarily staying in one place, and therefore they must coordinate that such that we the such that we are at one place for the meeting, because it would mean that they must talk to people who are coordinating transport as well, if there is no plenary on Tuesday. But if the plenary is there on Tuesday, perhaps it would be wise to have that meeting maybe immediately after plenary, during plenary itself. Maybe find time to for us to meet if there will be that chance, or ask for permission to have that meeting. Because we are putting up in different places, different locations, which are far. So we must be mindful of that fact. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Mashile. The meeting is there in terms of the program of Limpopo. There's no plenary on Tuesday, I think. But the meeting is, you'll see there on the program, is there. We'll have to finalize everything on that Tuesday so that the report can be 86 the following day and debate or whatever takes place on the 25th plenary. The issues that you've raised, I think they are valid.
Yes.
I mean, the secretary will have to. Yes.
I'm not worried about the schedule of the meeting on Saturday.
Yes.
But I'm worried about our whereabouts
on
Tuesday. Because we might be in various locations doing somewhat, Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masters. We are together. Honorable Masters.
Yeah. Thanks, Chairperson. I'm new in the NCOP. Although I may be old in this parliament. Now, Chair, I'm actually trying to understand how the final mandate is going to be sourced from provinces. I have not done this particular thing before, so I'm hearing some procedure that you are actually trying to put together for us to find ourselves in the final mandate next week. But then I'm not clear how that is going to be done in sourcing it from provinces. If I can be educated a little bit in the next 2-3 minutes on that particular process. The second issue was on the comment that you made. Just not to forget to include this particular item, Chair, that also it is problematic that we must include the item on municipalities with little population figures. Municipalities with little or small or minute population figures, when it comes to allocations of funds, then they are not enjoying anything, and even their development is retarded because of the numbers. And I'm not sure, sometimes maybe we have to debate these things, because for the first time in my life, the other week when we were in Northern Cape, I realized that there's a municipality that can only have 4 ward councillors. I picked up for the first time. And now you can just expect that municipality may be having 20,000 people only. I think we need to talk to those things, whether we really do need those kinds of municipalities. But currently I'm raising it in terms of the funding. They also have serious problems, Chair, that we need to talk to them.
Thank you, Honourable Mashile. I think that is why I had said that those are some of the things that we have to apply our minds on and present our views. So I'll be expecting that you will work something on that that you would present and then we debate further in this to come up with a final position in relation to the division of revenue business. Honorable DPR.
Okay, yes, thank you. The last sentence is very important, and my deployment is one of those municipalities with 4 wards, 2 PR councillors, it gives you 6. Getting in terms of equitable share and grants, 20.1 million a year, that keeps them alive. And in terms of what the reality, they're not viable. And what is hampering the financial business of the municipality is provincial departments is not paying the municipality what they're supposed to pay. Department of Health owes them 401,000 rand in terms of arrears. And Friday we engaged with the MEC in Germany to get the provincial health department in the Northern Cape to pay 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so that the hospital's electricity can be switched on because it was off. People's lives were at stake. That's how serious it is. But leave it there. The chairperson mentioned 3 or 4 very important points. Now, in my province, a summit on local government will be held in April. And as a provincial delegate from the Northern Cape, I will make a proposal to the leadership in that province that National Treasury be invited to come and explain the whole issue about the grants, the conditions, and the spending, maybe for the 10th, 12th time. But the more you repeat it, the more people may remember. Secondly, Chairperson, the issue you also mentioned on the non-viability of municipalities, the demarcation board is now in the process of demarcating municipalities and ward boundaries, and that there be some engagement maybe in a joint meeting between this committee and select committee and cooperative governance regarding this issue, looking at the viability of the municipalities in terms of demarcation. In the Northern Cape is Kamiesberg, it's Mier, it's Magareng, and it is Renosterberg. That's a big, big question mark over in terms of financial viability and the revenue base. Yes, that's all. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable DPR. And just a direct response to Honorable Mercedes' earlier question. My understanding is that the committee will obviously notify provinces about the processes of today when dealing with their negotiating mandates, and then based on that, provinces through the speaker's office in the format I spoke about earlier on will then have to send final mandates by Tuesday. So, honourable members, I would assume that we agree with the proposal I made earlier on. Agreed. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I would also request then, I know we are very busy, request the Secretary to remind us via SMSs to make such submissions by Friday. If we receive nothing from you as a member by Friday, we'll assume that you don't have any inputs to make. You will do such in reaction to the report next week, Tuesday. Honourable Members, thank you very much for your presence and participation in this meeting, and I would also like to thank Wendy and the team from Treasury, as well as our colleague from PNG for being part of this important meeting, and there be no further business to discuss this meeting. I also thank staff for being with us. There be no further business to discuss. This meeting stays adjourned.
Thank you,
dear. One more. Yes.
Thank you so much.
How can I do it?